Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Josh, as usual, we're here to make fantasy fun again, but let's be clear. You and I, we still struggle with this idea.
Every day.
I'm on your roof Saturday watching the Liverpool-Leeds match, and I'm struggling. The sun is blasting down on me. I don't have Salah captained. Meanwhile, you do. And I just decide to rip off this tweet apropos of nothing, not FPL related. And I just say the absolute state of these Leeds haircuts. That's it. That's the tweet.
Yep.
And I want to be straight up. It's not that it's just the man buns and these weird long haircuts on these.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I even Click with even the short haircuts, yeah, I found to be weird and disarming on Leeds. Yeah.
Is it Click or Klisch? I guess we should know this because he scored, but I actually don't know. It's Click. We need at least two game weeks to pronounce all the names correctly for the promoted teams. But anyway, yes, yeah, the third man, the third goal.
I feel like this tweet landed for some people, but in particular, it did not land for my friend Pig Teats 11, because his response to my Leeds haircuts tweet was this: people like you are the reason I never set foot in a football ground. Chelsea fans used to literally chase me down the street for having long hair. Most fans care about football, not faking haircuts. Says the man LARPing, and now Pig Teats 11 is talking about my Twitter profile picture. Says the man LARPing as an 1890s Londoner, Peaky Blinders need their costuming back, blood. So I don't know. Actually, yeah, you know, if you look at it, it's not fun. My tweet is not really fun. Pig Teats 11's tweet, definitely not fun.
Definitely not fun. Nope.
But when we step back, you know, honestly, that was kind of a fun exchange when I think about it.
It's the best and worst of Twitter at the same time. All right. So that's our making fantasy fun again moment for this week. We're 6-8 through the game week, but we're going to stick with our schedule. And there's, you know, it's a very drawn out, all these matches this season are very drawn out in ways that are awesome and terrible, I think, in equal measure. Probably would have been fine if we had taken that West Ham Newcastle match and just grouped it together with the Southampton Palace match. I feel like those could have been matches that I watched simultaneously. But, you know, on the other hand, it was 8 hours of sports on a Saturday. And we haven't had a lot of that in the last 6 months. So it was pretty awesome. It was pretty awesome just to be glued, like just classic fall day. Mid September, mm-hmm, glued to the TV, like, oh yeah, just it was great. So, you know, that's where we are. There's two matches tomorrow, I guess today by the time you're listening to this. But let's just talk about where we are right now with our teams. You know, I don't even want to get into too much about the 11th hour stuff, because I feel like that's something that everyone listening, you know, will have that moment this weekend where a player that was in your squad did extraordinarily well. Mm-hmm. For me, there were two, and they were in the same match. I had talked myself into Jamie Vardy over the course of Friday, and decided that I was going to have Vardy, and it was just a 1 week punt because I wanted to bring in Anthony Martial in game week two, and so I just get the player that I think could do the best. And then I sort of was like, you know what? Why am I overthinking this? Danny Ings, way to Crystal Palace. This team is wiped out. I'm just going to go with Ings instead. And then I was also like, you know what? I want to set my defense up for the long term. Don't go with James Justin. Just a little too risky. May lose a spot eventually. Go with Ben Davis. Nice, simple, strong Spurs defense.
They used to be on Swansea, Josh.
Strong Spurs defense. And so that the last half hour of the Leicester match was that moment for me where I was like, yep, like those are the two. Everybody's got a couple, and those are the two for me. So I'm on 60 points. I've got two players to go tomorrow, Sace and Werner. 60, I think, is fine through, you know, with nine to play. I guess my rank is 800,000, presumably to be higher after tomorrow's matches. There's 6 million people registered at this point. So, top 20%. That feels whatever that 18%, whatever the, you know, I'm not great at math, Brandon. But, you know, somewhere clearly in that range. Yeah. I think it's fine. And I think you're kind of in the same boat, right?
Yeah, I'm dead on with 60 points. I'm technically on 59 with my one-pointer from Kyle Walker-Peters to come off the bench. But the way I view game week one is, yeah, there will be lots of Sturm und Drang about, oh, last time we podcasted on our main feed, Josh, I was big upping Will Zaha.
Yeah, I called him terrible.
Zaha.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. And I don't know if you agree with this take, but I'm almost glad that I didn't bring Zaha in ultimately, because it was the second goal that was marginally offside that really would have killed me. Now that's yeah, a hilarious the thing brace. To say, because sure. I would yep. definitely take his one goal over Saka's 0 points. But yeah, mm. if I talk about my 11th hour regrets, Zaha would be one. And then, yeah, I did the Vardy to Ings move as well in favor of Ings. So I kind of missed that. But so there's all this effort put into your game week one draft, and now everyone is panicking. They're just sort of like, either I blew it, or maybe I need to solidify here or there. Mm-hmm. It's like these video games like Fortnite or PUBG, where you get parachuted into an open world. Hunger Games starts out like this too, right? You just pop up in a world where you don't know what the rules of the game are. You don't know what weapons you have at your disposal, and you get your starting point. So mm-hmm. now everyone with your game week one squad, whether you're going to finish on 40 points or 90 points, that's your starting point. Either you found a knife in a bush, or you found a bazooka in a barn. And so now the game is afoot, and you have right. to understand, you, it's not that you blew it. Now you understand what your starting position is, and now you have to push forward to find more weapons, to carve out territory, to find shelter. Mm-hmm. So that's how I'm trying to approach whatever this game week one result is going to be. This is just the starting point that I ended up with, and now the game begins.
Yeah, I think that's good perspective. Yeah, you can't lose anything in game week one, and it's this is where Twitter can really start to like corrode your brain a little bit, especially if you're like on fantasy Twitter, because it's simultaneously, especially in game week one, or it's just like it's simultaneously everybody complaining about the players they had who they dropped at the last minute, or people who got something right who are celebrating with like 27 exclamation points, you know. And it's like there's kind of no in between.
Here's another piece of perspective where that's concerned. You and I are both sitting on 60 points. You have one more player to go, but we're both on 60 points. I captained Aubameyang and you captained Salah. You nailed your captaincy. And I think I just say that to prove the point that it's very marginal right now. Mm-hmm. If you felt like, oh, I missed this one call, but there were other good things that happened in my squad, that's a good thing. You have steady footing to move from.
Yeah. And I think the one thing you have to really keep in mind too is, got the captaincy right. That's great. A lot of the other players, lots of blanks in the team. But I think you really have to keep in mind that this was a blank game week. There were four teams who didn't play, and three of those teams were Man City, Man United, and Burnley. And in some ways, even though Man City and Man United are superior teams, those are three of the most important teams in fantasy, because Burnley are full of defenders, mm-hmm. Many of whom, like, people might have paid extra for Pope, for example, just to have him all season. Taylor in game week one, you may have wanted to have him as well. It just really would have changed things if we had had those. And, obviously all the Man City and Man United players. I mean, if Man United played in game week one, I almost certainly would have had one of their attackers, whether it was Bruno or Martial or Rashford or whoever it may be, right? It's hard to even think that way going to game week one. But Man City obviously as well. So I think because of that, everyone kind of had a slightly funky team. I had Jared Bowen and St. Maximin in my starting lineup. Like, that's not optimal, Yeah. And maybe in hindsight, the move would have been just to bury one of the Man City players on your bench and have them ready for game week two. That is looking like a better outcome now. But, it's kind of hard to go into that first game week and bench expensive players and play that much of a long game. It's not very fun. And you also, I felt like, certainly so I felt Friday night, you run the risk of just kind of giving one game week away in order to play, you know, play for the long term. And so the way that I did it is I only spent $99 million. I left myself $1 million in the bank in order to make my transfers a little bit easier. And for example, my plan right now is to move from Ings to Martial. I may do that early in the week if it looks like there's a price rise, but otherwise I'm going to hang out for a few days and sort of see how things go. The other move that may have to happen is Jared Bowen to literally anybody. because I don't really know what that is the classic 1 a.m. before game week one move where you're like, I don't know what to do with this slot. And, you know, Willian was a little too expensive and didn't fit into the long-term plans. He would have been awesome. Obviously, we're going to talk about him more in a second. But I just didn't really know what to do. And so I thought, you know what? West Ham, home to Newcastle, I think they could do well. And it's just bizarre. I mean, it felt like I can't remember ever seeing a team look like they quit on their coach before the season even started. It was such a strange performance from them.
Genuinely shocked that West Ham didn't look to solve that managerial question over the short break. David Moyes, he saved them from relegation last season. He's done it before. You have to give him some degree of credit there, but this is not the guy that's going to take a team that West Ham has potential. They have really tremendous young up and coming players. And you look at a talismanic figure like Declan Rice, you've got to give this guy a reason to stick around. And David Moyes is probably not going to be that reason for him. And if you put the money down on who's first for the sack, I think Moyes is going to be right up there. I mean, I do want to talk a little bit about reactionary, like hot takery from this weekend. And
well, so let's get right into some questions here. Because I think you will get a moment to respond, especially when we talk about Fulham Arsenal in a second. Mm-hmm. Eric Freeman says, keep us from hitting the panic button. What players looked good despite not hauling big fantasy points?
Yeah, well, I think if we were talking about players that we already probably have in our team, Aubameyang, a 7-pointer seems like a huge disappointment for a highly captained 12 million midfielder, like the most expensive, among the most expensive players in the game. And you think this was where we wanted Aubameyang and needed Aubameyang to haul, and he's just come away with one goal, a yellow card, and no bonus. I still think that Arsenal looked phenomenal. Aubameyang had plenty of chances to both score and assist. Lacazette had a clear shot on goal that Rodak miraculously saved with his feet. So I think Aubameyang has definitely earned his place in game week two for me, and the armband is still on him. And if you look at players who were not in our team, who, looked way better than I was expecting, also on Arsenal. You mentioned Willian a moment ago, Josh. It was interesting to see how he transferred transferred his form from Chelsea to Arsenal. And I think there are a lot of question marks about how was he going to fit into the squad? Was Pepe going to occupy that space? Was Willian going to push Pepe farther forward? Well, we've seen Willian is already ready to take on a leadership role in the Arsenal midfield, which is amazing. And he's going to be on a ton of set pieces. So suddenly, Aubameyang to Willian looks like a very interesting way to save some cash, but still not give up on what is going to be a flair attacking team this season.
Yeah, I think just in terms of, and I guess, you're right. Hitting the panic button would make you think that we're thinking purely about players that we might have in our team. And I guess one player that people would have who almost got a red card, got it rescinded. I thought Kyle Walker-Peters looked like a pretty good value at $4.5 million. Very nearly picked up an assist right at the end. And another example of why you can't look at the results and just, I didn't think Southampton looked good. I don't see any strong, I don't feel strongly compelled to keep Danny Ings any longer. I mean, we'll see what happens. It may be that he stays for more game week, but he had a golden point blank chance right at the end of the match. If that goes in, Probably, you know, 3 bonus points for him as well. He finishes on 9. Suddenly, it's a very comparable return to Jamie Vardy. And Kyle Walker-Peters picks up an assist in that moment as well. So, yeah, I think that I didn't actually think Ings looked that good, but he's so dangerous. I think that.
Well, we were watching that Southampton match, and we continually were commenting on the lack of midfield thrust from Southampton. So if you are going to give Hasenhüttl any credit, you'd think he can tweak that midfield going into game weeks 2 and 3 and maybe give Ings a little more support. I mean, maybe the theory watching that was, is Che Adams surplus to requirements here? Do they not need a second striker? They need another body in the midfield to help. So I don't know. Che Adams is one where you might be panicking slightly.
Do you think so? I thought he looked better than Ings in this match. In some ways, he looked more dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know,
maybe as a Justin owner, this is another panic button that I'm hesitating not to press. Like, easy for me to say walking away with 9 points, but Justin was getting annihilated on the left-hand side by West Brom, and he was, every time he took possession of the ball, he was getting tackled. He wasn't able to make tackles himself.
Yeah.
Though, like, this is where you have to have the push and pull of the panic. Even though you run the eye test over Justin, you're like, wow, he didn't look very good. You still watch and you're like, wow, he's getting in incredible attacking positions. He's just like loitering in the 18-yard box on the attacking end. And sure enough, he ends up getting Skyped down for a penalty. So
opposite side of the pitch he plays on too, right?
He seemed to creep into the middle during some passages of play. So it's like he gets a little bit of a free license. So those are things that you pick up on of like,
right,
this is the FPL part of my brain of like, well, maybe I'm not giving them a pass on them as an actual footballer, but as an FPL asset. Sure, let's keep rolling.
Yeah, who got burned more on the left this weekend, him or Matt Doherty? That was crazy. It was like some weird like a film that was like caught in a loop or something. It was like every like 90 seconds, Richarlison had the ball like virtually unmarked and bearing down on goal. I was like, how can this keep? I mean, they had to take him out, and like you actually wonder if maybe he just shouldn't have been. He shouldn't have been starting yet.
He was huffing and puffing at the end of the match.
Yeah.
Not really a great week for fullbacks at all, except for Lucas Dean. Trent looked terrible. The Liverpool defense was just all sixes and sevens. I think I'm using
not
that correctly.
Great. Yeah. Not awesome. So, all right, let's try to keep things positive though, Brandon. Eric said don't hit the panic button, and then we just panicked to like 9 players. So let's move
I'm pressing it right now. I hope I didn't stop the recording by like pressing the panic button.
Yeah. Saint-Maximin is an interesting option. I don't really know what to think of after that game. I'm like, does anything he does lead to fantasy returns? It was like, it's kind of fun to watch him play, but you're also like, I don't know what it's like. It reminds me of, I'm not even sure what it reminds me of. He's a very unique player. So I don't know how long he's going to be my team for. I'm certainly keen on keeping him for the Brighton match, but he's an interesting player, isn't he?
Yeah, I think the way to say don't press the panic button on Saint-Maximin is you have to be encouraged by Newcastle's team performance there.
Totally, yeah.
Walked away easily with the 3 points, and it's just game week 1. So if you say Newcastle is clearly heading in the right direction, that's only going to benefit all of the attacking players. Maybe it's going to benefit their defense. I'm not at all really still interested in Newcastle's defense, but I think as they continue to grow and gel, a player like Saint-Maximin probably has some FPL value to give us.
I think so. I think the point is like at 5.5 million, you can't expect returns every week from those types of players. At 5.5 million, right. I think one every 3 matches is probably a more reasonable expectation. They're just, you know, if they were delivering like every other match, they would be 8, 9, 10 million. So, certainly not too worried about him so far. And like you said, Wilson seems to really be making a difference there. All right. So we talked about the good. Jeff Husby says, of all the players you discussed in nearly 8 hours of prep podcast, is that all it was? It feels like even more hours than that. He says, which performances have surprised you so far? He says both good and bad. We already talked about the good. Who surprised you in a bad way? Did anybody strike you as, wow, he was not ready for the season to restart?
Yeah, I mean, I said Liverpool defense. That was a shocking performance against Leeds. And you do have to give some credit to Leeds. I think we were both a little skeptical about how Leeds would come out of the gates in game week one. And they certainly, coming off of the watching the Arsenal Fulham match, Leeds were streets beyond where Fulham was against Arsenal. However, Trent and Van Dijk and Gomez, I think Robertson will get a pass this week, were full of blunders and errors. And I kind of couldn't believe what I was watching. Now, I don't know if this is just like a continue, like how long is this hangover going to last for Liverpool?
I don't know. There was a moment, in like the 60 or 70th minute of that match, because Mane would be the one who comes to mind as somebody who was like a little disappointing for 12 million. And there was a moment, I think it was when it was 3-2 Liverpool, and Salah, who just looked fantastic, I thought, really the entire match, works this really nice combination. I can't remember if it was with Mane the whole time or not, but it sort of ended with him playing Mane, and Mane just blows like a really easy chance, and they both just kind of laugh afterwards, like, whatever. You know, it's just like there's no fire. They're just like, oh, well, I guess we blew that one, eh? And,
whoops.
And on the one hand, you're like,
well, like I guess it's a slide whistle going.
Yeah. And on one hand, you're like, well, like it's good that they're so loose, I guess. Like, you don't want to be too tight. But then, of course, they conceded a third goal, you know, 3 minutes later. And you're like, man, you guys were just like laughing about this missed shot a minute ago. Now you might drop 2 points in this match, and then, you know, they almost did, except for the late penalty. So I think that, I mean, this is just why it's so hard to win 2 years in a row, right? It's just so hard to, unless you I think the squad depth is a problem. I mean, you know, in Man City, you know, you have Pep, who's kind of pathologically motivated to win in ways that probably hurts him sometimes, but they also have like tons of squad depth. So, you know, Raheem Sterling knows, it's sort of like a famous thing, right, from Pep, where it's like he knows like if he misses a big chance, like he may not start the next game. You know, it's like there's like a ton of pressure on these players. Probably means they don't play with the same joy as Liverpool, at least at times. But I think it does keep that fire going. And so I don't know. It worries me a little bit from a defensive standpoint. I mean, you know, Trent was really a complete non-factor in this match, and I don't think that'll last. I certainly wouldn't be looking to drop Trent yet, but it was a little concerning just how non-existent he was, especially when you have Robertson, who was 0.5 million cheaper, who was just all over the. I mean, he was on like all the set pieces. He was taking corners, which is he would occasionally take corners last year, but not to this level. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I would say, just going back to Leicester, we talked about Justin, but I do think there were a few red flags surrounding Leicester. Like what I saw against them playing against West Brom was there's a lot of that team post restart from the end of last season that's still there in that. The first half, I was like, I don't know if this Leicester team can score against West Brom. And that's really not where you want to be with Leicester at the moment. Now, Vardy proved his worth of £10 million coming away with the brace, but it's on two penalties. And I think that we have to monitor Leicester pretty closely, because you know, I think that result really does flatter them as far as FPL is concerned.
Yeah, two pens. That's. I actually thought the Castagna. I mean, he looks
dangerous. Nice. Yeah,
It
was nice.
And Pratt, I guess maybe he flew a little under the radar as a 5.5 million option. I mean, these 5.5 million players. It's like you could have just thrown all 37 of them in a bucket and picked two out, right? It's like who knew who was going to be the best option? Yeah. It feels like a complete crapshoot. I mean, you know, it ended up being that you could have just invested in some of these Leeds players, you know, which actually leads me right into the next question, which is from Boston Prop. He says, now that we've seen all the promoted teams, which players in them intrigue you and which ones were you wrong about? He says, looking at you, Mitro. So Brandon, you've been waiting to unleash your hot take in response. This is a cold take. In response to the hot take about Fulham. So let's just give me your Fulham take. What, like, not even like necessarily responding to Boston Ross's question here, but just what are you thinking about Fulham right now? Is there any fantasy value here across the board with this team?
I don't know if you can hear the police sirens in the background. Of course, they came on right when we started talking about Fulham. So I had an issue with social media during the Fulham Arsenal match because there was a lot of hot takery about, wow, Fulham might be the worst team to ever play in the top division in England. And yep, there's like no way they're getting more than Derby County's 11 points this season. And it's less me as a Fulham fan having that sting. And it's kind of like, what did you expect was going to happen here? Like, they lost 3-0 to a really good Arsenal team in their first match in an empty stadium. I'm just like, what did you think you were going to see here? They didn't make a lot of robust signings in the offseason. And I think that's actually a good thing for Fulham. That's something that they tried in 2018 to just bring in a bunch of new players.
In some ways, it was like famous players, right? It was like,
yeah, the
like
Andre Schürrles of the world. Yeah. And that's not what you want at all. I mean, they did get burned on like trying to reinvent themselves with players like Sarri. And
But he was another kind of famous, like he was like a highly touted player. That was a sure, big signing for them. Yep.
Sure. So I'm not here to say, no, actually, Fulham are secretly good, and that is a wrong read on this team. I'm just kind of like, Fulham are what they are, and I can't believe that not many people sort of came to terms with this before they actually watched them play Arsenal.
Okay, that is fair, but I mean, I am one of the people who got I feel like a little silly now that I have Mitro, right? Like, I mean, like thinking about this team and thinking about the Arsenal match being probably a pretty tough match. You know, he played 180 minutes away to Serbia, which I took as a good sign as opposed to this is like the first time ever where we're going into a game week one and a player is on international break induced rest. You know, like that was a new challenge to deal with.
Mitro's had a hamstring issue, you know, since the Fulham were in the playoffs. Imagine like if there are any Serbian people out there listening, I want to hear your opinion on this, but I imagine Mitro shows up in the Serbian locker room, like he's playing 180 minutes. Like that's a lot of machismo probably happening in that locker room.
Yeah.
And if Mitro is out, Fulham's season is kaput. It's done. It's over. So if he comes back and the medical staff says, I don't know, you've got some issue, you're still feeling something in your hamstring, we can't give you that many minutes. So you could say you're foolish for not having Mitro, but only because he didn't play.
Right.
I would go back to his stats from a repulsive Fulham team in the 2018-19 season. Mitro still led all forwards in the league. He had the most shots in the entire league, save Mo Salah during the 2018-19 season. So we're just talking about his FPL price tag here. Now, obviously, if Fulham continue to look like they have no inventiveness in the midfield, then yeah, dump him.
But I guess the concern would be, and I don't think we know the answer to this question, so I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but the concern would be if his health is so precarious that he's at risk of frequently only playing 20 minutes in a match, then clearly he's not worth owning, you know? No, and I think if you just have to throw out a number, I'm not like, you know, trying to put you on the spot here too much, but like, do you think he starts away to Leeds? Like, you think there's a pretty good chance of that? Or do you think it's up in the air?
I'd say it's up in the air. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Unless we hear otherwise, that'd be the, and we talk about, you know, American press conferences versus English press conferences, not very forthcoming. So we won't know. So I don't know. And that's just the facts. And yeah, I think it's fair to say the appeal of Mitro and that price tag is he's going to play Harry Kane levels of minutes. And if that comes into doubt, then yeah, then he's absolutely 100% not even worth 6.0. And get him
fair
on
enough
team.
I had to push hard to get you there. I knew I would eventually if I use the right combination of words. I think the concern with them though too is just whether they can score enough in general. I mean, looking at this midfield, I'm on their team page on the website right now. I mean, there's honestly not a particularly good player in that midfield. I mean, I think Tom Kearney is a pretty good player, but other than that, it's not super strong. You know, I mean, no offense to them. I like Fulham and I would love to see them stay out, but it's not very strong, you know? And so I do think that there's a little bit of worry about if he's going to get the ball enough to score.
Mm-hmm. They're going to have to sign at least one more midfielder. They've been signing goalkeepers and I mean, they needed more right backs, but yeah, 100% they need a robust attacking midfielder or they're sunk for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. The other two teams, let's leave Leeds for last because they're the most interesting team, but just West Brom. I think the one thing that did stand out was I thought Callum Robinson, he earned the start, 5.5 million classified as a forward. Was he not classified as a mid last year? I guess he got moved up to the forward spot when he moved to West Brom. I could be wrong about that, but I thought he was a midfielder.
I don't recall, to be honest with you. I don't.
Yeah. Well regardless. So Robinson starts at 5.5 million. I thought he had a couple of chances in the match. I thought he looked mm-hmm. pretty decent. I don't know that there's anything else that really stood out to me on this West Brom team.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I feel like they looked solid. They looked like they read the brief, they got the brief, and they looked a little more solid than you would say Fulham did. Mm-hmm. But still tons of concerns there. Yeah, no real FPL takeaways for me.
Yeah, me either. I mean, I'm still very curious about Matias Pereira and you know, Diagana, 5.5 million. He actually kind of their best chance of the game was created by him in the first mm-hmm. half. And so I think he's interesting and somebody that I may keep my eye on. Maybe, you know, Saint-Maximin turns into him at some point.
Yeah, the knee jerk there would be Pereira on West Brom at 6 million compared to any Leeds asset. Leeds look like they're going to score more goals. Just goal for goal, Leeds will score mm-hmm. more. So if you've got that 5.5 to 6 million budget, Pereira, sorry, you look like a great fun player, but you have to, in a shrewd FPL yeah. move, you have to just start looking at Leeds.
So that brings us to Leeds. In some ways, a difficult match to assess because, you know, their defense did concede 4 goals and 2 penalties. That's obviously going to play a factor and leaving Mo Salah unmarked for a second goal, which, I mean, I know the ball kind of fell to him, but that was not pretty. I mean, he was able to tee that thing up like he was playing against practice cones. You know, that was,
he looked like he was playing a carnival game where it was just like, hey, how hard can you kick the ball, win the teddy bear?
But Stuart Dallas comes away with an assist. And this is sort of the story with Leeds, that their defenders can pick up some points a little bit like a Wolves a couple seasons ago when they came up a different formation, but same idea. I thought what impressed me was, I mean, they just, for one thing, they seemed really confident. I felt like they looked like they knew what they were doing out yeah. there. And yeah. you don't often see promoted teams come up and look like they're just like ready to win, you know, at Anfield, mm-hmm. you know, in game week one. So did any particular players or moments or anything like that, you know, stand out for you in that match?
Yeah. Jack Harrison at 5.5. And, you know, this is a young man who we saw playing for NYCFC up in Yankee Stadium. And mm-hmm. you're like, he's from Stoke. Come to our great shores here at the States. I didn't know that just a few short years later, you'd see him scoring against Premier League champions at Anfield. But the way yeah. he cut that ball to his right onto his shooting foot and finished the way he did, that makes me more interested in the midfielders at Leeds at that price point than somebody like Bamford. It looks like Bamford is leading the charge to have a price rise early this week. So he bumped up to 5.
Which I think is crazy because, I mean, the one goal he scored was a slightly lucky goal. I actually thought he missed a bunch of chances. And I think that Rodrigo is eventually going to take his spot. So I would not be on the Bamford train personally. Although they do play Fulham at home in game week 2. So maybe as a short-term move, it's worth it. Yeah, just Leeds in general, I'm kind of bullish about. I know you've been very, like, you feel like the Marcelo Bielsa stuff has been, like, a little oversold. But coming out of that match, it's hard not to be kind of excited about Leeds. I'll say that much.
Yeah, it's a little bit like I'm not going to try and convince you that Fulham are good and Leeds are not good. Obviously, Fulham are not great and Leeds are pretty good. But it's my Midwest mentality, Josh, where I want everyone to just be a little nicer.
Sure.
Like everyone, okay, here's just what, relax. Okay, relax about Bielsa. Relax about Fulham.
Sure. I'm going to take my sport, my fantasy hat off for a second. I'm going to put on my sports hat, and I'll just say this much, Brandon. Leeds know how to score goals. There are so few teams in the Premier League that know how to score goals. Like, yeah, we saw this all weekend, and we're going to see this all season long. And it is such a relief when a team joins the Premier League from the Championship, you know, one of these promoted teams, and actually seems like they know how to score goals. It is very exciting, and it's fun as a fan, and it's fun as a fantasy player. And so, for that reason alone, the ability to score goals, I am excited about the Leeds experience going into the season. All right, Brandon, let's take a break, and we're going to talk about transfers and strategy for game week 2. House cleaning time, Brandon. Everybody loves to clean their house, don't they? Mm-hmm. That's a hugely popular thing that everybody loves to do, right? Mm-hmm. Patreon. Thank you so much to all of the new Patreon supporters that we picked up over the last week who've joined to say thank you or to access the bonus podcast, to get the Mini League Mate Week in Review newsletter, which will be coming to you, I think, what, Monday night or Tuesday morning?
Yeah.
That's very exciting. The Always Cheating. Brandon, are we going to start calling it this? I dropped this on you on Saturday, but I think we should now call this the Harvey Milk Mustache Cup.
Yes.
In honor of your beloved cat, begins at game week 5.
Yeah. My poor cat who died of feline leukemia a couple weeks ago now has her own cup named in her honor.
That's something. It's the best I could do in a socially distanced way. I guess I could have sent you a card or something. That's not really
thanks, Josh.
Not really my way. Sorry. And at the highest tiers, you can get our new Make Fantasy Fun Again t-shirt. Lots of different ways to support us. I don't really know why I went down that road at all. Brandon, can you thank our new Patreon supporters, please?
I'd love to. At the producer level, thanks to Sam Schauer, Henry Baker, and Will Husby. And thanks to our Volkswagen patrons, Linda San Pellegrino, Simon and James Teague. At the Lord Sorloth tier, big thanks to Dan Briggs, Yoshia Ikahashi, Christian Schultz, Angelo DQ, Nigel Henze, Andrew Ovens, Chris James, Ben DeLucci, Michael Bradley, the famous American midfielder. Michael Bradley, this is incredible. Also, Andrew, Yogev Baliti, David Conway, Eric Sibbles. Oh, well, great to see you there, Eric. Logan Jory, Tim Fontenot, and Alexander. And at the Pookie Patron tier, quick thanks to our friends Greg Marsh, Sam Mullins, Ben Cohen, Victor Wolf, Dan Schmick, Dimitri Slavin, David Lentz, Chris Tang, Owen O'Keefe, Zaf Snyder, not the director of Batman versus Superman, Philip Shaw, and Zach Bardwell.
And once again, if you want to support the podcast, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. Brandon, that was shout out number one. Here comes shout out number two, the Hub, Fantasy Football Hub. Go to fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always to get 25% off whichever tier you choose. Why would you do that? Brandon, that's some of the finest managers in the game. And I that sounds like some sort of hyperbolic thing, but it honestly is true. I mean, some of like the smartest, most mm-hmm. successful long-term managers have basically been brought in by this site. And they go on podcasts, they talk about their strategy, they do team reveals of their squads each game week. It's a great masterclass from some of the finest fantasy managers managing their fantasy teams. And in addition to that, if all you want are just the real-time Opta stats, then you can go in there and grab those as well. So that's something for me. I sort of go back and forth. Sometimes I want other people's thoughts on my hat. Sometimes I just want to go in there and dig into the data myself and come up with my own conclusions. Either way, no matter what kind of manager you are, you will find both options on the Hub. So go to fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always to access all those articles, all those podcasts, all those videos, and get 25% off whichever tier you choose. All right, Brandon, game week 2 kicks off. Obviously, we still have 2 more matches in game week 1, but game week 2 kicks off on Saturday. very spread out once again. I'm realizing there are no double ups this weekend. Oh, Brandon, my poor family. You know, I'm going to have to record some of these. It's going to get which ones? Okay. Looking at the next 10 matches, Brandon. Okay.
Which ones are you going to skip?
Yeah. What's the skipper? Everton, West Brom. In theory, that's the skipper. But it's 7:30 on Saturday. What else have I got to do?
Also, like, Everton, coming out of this weekend, sure. Everton look like a bunch of absolute studs. So yeah. I'm definitely watching that match.
That's a good point. We actually went a little bit long in the opening section, so we didn't get a chance to talk about Everton too much. But I was super impressed by Everton in the Spurs match. And obviously, you could focus on how Spurs looked like. It was, in some ways, it was an interesting parallel. The Newcastle West Ham match and the West Ham Newcastle match, I guess I should say, and the Spurs Everton match both featured home teams facing teams that basically remade their squads over the summer. And in both cases, the remade teams looked way better than the established group.
Yeah. Strange. And I would even say Crystal Palace is kind of remade just because of injury. And Southampton weren't great, but I thought Crystal Palace just, I don't know how Hodgson does it, but he continues to somehow take the scraps at Selhurst Park and make them look fantastic. And even at the end, when Eze came on, they were just bossing the midfield. So I'm kind of getting a little excited about Crystal Palace here.
He's like the dream for these owners, for the lower half table clubs, or, 10th place on down. Like he must be he's the dream manager, right? Because you just can't ever imagine a Roy Hodgson team going down, and they're not dreadful to watch. I mean, they're not like my favorite team to watch, but they play competent football. Like they're not, it's not fans, dreary. I wouldn't say
Hodgson is not the sort where the fans just turn on him. I mean, it was kind of a different story when he was the England manager, but he's higher just stakes, like a likable cherry cheeked grandpa.
Doing his best.
So we're all rooting for you.
So Everton West Brom kicks things off. I at this point I'm sort of like, maybe I bring in Lucas Dean. I'm sort of I was hugely impressed with that whole squad, and so I think there's a lot to watch there. So as far as skippable matches go, maybe Newcastle Brighton, that's 9 a.m on Sunday. I could probably watch St. Maximum try his best a little bit later. Aston Villa, Sheffield United on Monday. That seems like a skippable one, too. That's maybe I'll actually.
What about Leicester Burnley? I mean, it's going to be Burnley's first game week this season, so you kind of want to suss out their assets there. But Leicester Burnley seems like a DVRable fixture. I'll catch it later.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout there, especially because I still won't have Vardy. Unless I stumble into a wild card. So I don't want to watch him do well at home to Burnley. That's just going to be annoying. So, I think that's a skippable one. So let's get on to some questions here. Andrew Sigel says, Salah versus Aubameyang, captaincy round 2. Who you got in the rematch? So let's maybe make this more of a Royal Rumble, though, Brandon. Who else should fit into this captaincy pool for game week 2? Got Salah, Aubameyang. Who else are you throwing in that pot?
Yeah, I mean, we were just extolling the virtues of Roy Hodgson and Crystal Palace. However, it's just the attacking potency of Manchester United. I think that Martial and Bruno, even Rashford, they all look like strong captaincy shouts. Newcastle, the mighty Newcastle putting 2 past West Ham. I think Aubameyang feels still like the stronger shout over Salah. Now, this is before we have seen the remade Chelsea play Brighton and Chelsea host Liverpool. If Chelsea look fantastic against Brighton, that's going to give me even more pause with, again, going with Mo Salah for the captaincy. So my bus team right now, it's with Aubameyang. I think we saw plenty from Arsenal against Fulham to make me feel good about that. Manchester City, it's against Wolves, but, looking at these opening results, we were just saying while we were watching that Liverpool-Leeds match, if Liverpool drop points here, does this just open the door for Manchester City to walk this league? Now, granted, we still haven't seen City play this season, but the narrative is there to happen where City have a point to prove. Pep has a point to prove before his contract expires.
Yeah.
They could just come out and absolutely steamroll Wolves. I would not be shocked by that.
Yeah. If I felt confident, and maybe you can help me feel more or less confident about this. If I felt like Phil Foden was going to start in game week two, I think I would maybe just move to Foden as my transfer this game week. Just get rid of this failed Jared Bowen experiment and start bringing in Man City players now. My thought was to move from Ings to Martial, which is still what I'm sort of that's a strong contender for moves, but I don't know. But yeah, like you said, I mean, especially Wolves with a remade backline, I think that could be some potential there.
Raheem Sterling is still the player that I'm kind of just like, I'm ready for him to become the standout FPL asset this season. It was all KDB last season and Sterling just was fits and starts. But I wonder if a really proactive upside move is to move Salah or Mane right to Raheem Sterling going into game week two. And you could even go ahead and captain him.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if I'm going to move Salah the entire season. This is how I felt even going into the season, though. So, I mean, there's a question here from Kyle T, and a lot of people had this question that, you know, a lot of people are planning on Salah or Aubameyang to KDB. A lot of people had some variation of this question. A lot of people are planning on Salah or Aubameyang to KDB. Does this first week mean you can realistically hang on to both instead of freeing money for United and City assets? Did anything change from the two players the two performances that we saw that makes you feel like because you talk about Raheem Sterling, like you said, it's going to be one of those two players that goes, right? It's very hard to have three expensive players in your midfield.
I think Aubameyang is, God, I hate this question because I think the reason I hate this question is because it has some like inherent negativity. It's like, which good player do you want to drop? Sure. And I don't really want to drop good players, but it just feels like the sensible move is Aubameyang. If you're looking at both Salah and Aubameyang, Aubameyang is the first to drop come game week three when they have Liverpool. God, I don't know, but Aubameyang is so confusing because he has looked good in every match, and including the Community Shield, the FA Cup final. God, I'm so confused.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we thought was going to happen. That we, you know, that we brought in these players because we thought they would do well, and then the really tricky thing is deciding when to move them on. I honestly don't care how well Aubameyang plays in game week two. He is out for me after game week two. He could score 5 goals in game week two, and I would still drop before game week three. Well, that is my strategy, and I just feel like we have enough evidence on Aubameyang to know that he is really good when he's playing bad teams and that he tends to disappear against good teams. And I believe that to be true. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of evidence that Kevin De Bruyne or Raheem Sterling, whichever one you go with, are awesome against everybody at all the time and are very captainable and are fantastic. I mean, I'm still feeling the afterglow of Kevin De Bruyne, you know, locking in a top 100K finish for me in game week 38 this season with a massive captain performance. So, you know, I think for me, it isn't tricky. And I just know that I'm going to move to Man City player. I think KDB versus Sterling is kind of a fun question because Sterling's ownership is like 2%, but what could possibly happen for me is that there are enough cheap forward options, which I don't think we have yet, but Callum Wilson may be one of them. Maybe Rodrigo turns into one, that you could have three expensive midfielders at some point. And then you would just have like, maybe you'll have like, you have two cheap forwards and like, and you know, maybe Ryan Brewster gets that maybe that deal goes through with Sheffield United, you know, and maybe that's like a wild card team in game week four or something like that.
Yeah, I've been trying to make it work that if you could keep Aubameyang and Salah and then bring in Sterling or Kevin De Bruyne or even bring in Bruno. And it's funny, the only way I can see it making it work is every defender is 4.5 and with one 4.0. So you've got room for one 4.5 plus defender. Mm-hmm. And then your strikers are, it's just absolute
just guts your team.
It really does.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't feel balanced. So I think that I thought you hit upon some good advice in our preseason coverage, just general sort of how to treat your team, where a good way to look at your transfers starting now that you have a squad, is as best you can leave those cheap players where they are and put yourself in a position where you can use your transfers week to week on those premium assets. So even though you can't have at all times three premium midfielders, you're able to move Aubameyang to a City midfielder or move him to a Liverpool and rotate them in and out. You can bring in Aubameyang when he has that flat track bully setup. Now it's going to get a little dicier when price changes come into effect, but I think that's perhaps a viable strategy.
I will say with the Aubameyang thing that it may be that Arteta has figured it out, because I mean, how can you not be just insanely impressed with everything he's done so far? And I think that Willian is a player who could probably fit, and I don't think it's a knee jerk at all to try to look at bringing him into your squad, you know, as soon as possible. I think that it looks like he's just exactly what that squad needed. And so I feel, even if I'm not super high on Aubameyang kind of as like a real like long-term keeper, I am really high on this Arsenal team. We didn't talk about their defense at all, but I mean, Gabriel, 5 million, comes out with 15 points. Right? Interesting, like Castagne too. We'll see tomorrow if one of the new Wolves defenders does anything, but if they even start. But yeah, I thought it was, I mean, Gabriel's only 5 million. Rob Holding got the start. I don't know if that's a long-term thing or not, but he's only 4.5 million. You assume that Saliba is eventually going to, you know, earn a start as well. It's kind of an interesting lineup for Arsenal, didn't you think? It was not what I was expecting at all.
Yeah, all precipitated by the bust-up with Nketiah and who's the Real Madrid midfielder guy? Ceballos, which is like much ado about nothing. Like, who cares if these guys are throwing punches at each other?
Was there a bust-up? I actually hadn't heard that.
Yeah,
I somehow missed that.
During the warm-up before the match, they were doing the whole, like, you know, passing around bull in the ring sort of a thing, and they were going in on each other pretty hard, and then they had to be separated. I don't know if that really impacts anything, but I mean, I got totally Alex Iwobi'd in game week one. I did this before, like 3 years ago. Alex Iwobi played like every minute in preseason for Arsenal.
Look good in the champion and the
It looked great. It looks so good. Let's do it. And then you realize, oh right, the reason why Iwobi was playing all those minutes preseason for Arsenal is because they didn't want to waste those minutes with like their actual good players getting hurt or something like that.
Now, Saka is good.
I don't dispute it. And that's exactly why I brought him in. He looked fantastic when he was on the pitch last season, looked great in the Charity Shield. And then when he doesn't start, doesn't get a single minute, I'm like, right, Alex freaking Iwobi. So he's the first one. I'm pretty strongly considering burning four this week just to solve that issue.
I was going to ask you, what are your planned or possible transfers for game week two? What are you thinking right now?
Well, like you, I've got a million in the bank, and that was with the eye toward moving Danny Ings to Martial, which leaves me another 0.5. So then, I don't know. Saka is tricky because, like you, I also have Saint-Maximin, and I just have these two weirdo 5.5 midfielders, and I just want to do something that's a little
long term.
Oh, I want to be a little more incisive in my midfield. So I feel like I got my price arrangement a little wrong in my midfield, and I need to shift a bit of money so that I can turn one of these 5.5 mids into maybe somebody like Zaha. Just somebody with a little more assurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think I can do that right away, though.
Foden. I mean, I know I just talked about Foden, too. I mean, Foden, you could do Saka to Foden, you know, this week. I mean, Foden, it is crazy that Foden's only 6.5 million. I mean, we haven't talked about him enough just because City didn't play in game week one, but really flying under the radar. I mean, he's 4.1% owned, 6.5 million, probably a fairly regular starter for that team. One would think. I mean, I guess we'll see. I mean, it's Like, I hate to, it's like Pepperlet to me is like the phrase park the bus, and that like, it's such a trigger phrase for me now that I, like, I can't stand hearing it. You know, it's like every time you hear Pepperlet, it's like, it's like two nails just like going down on a chalkboard. Like, I just, it's like, yeah, like, yes, he's going to rotate. Like, we don't have to talk about it. It's a possibility. It could happen. But I think that he's a player, and you know, and the other player is Mason Greenwood, who just, it really, and Foden actually falls in the same category as Greenwood, where you're like, also, by the way, it's like two guys got in trouble, but only like the black guy is like getting all the bad press. Like, that's weird. Like, what, I don't know. That's a strange thing, but Mason Greenwood and Foden are both, seemingly at risk of possibly not playing in game week one. It sort of depends on whether they're going to train with their team this week. So it's very annoying. And so, like, if Greenwood starts to train this week and photos come out of him with the team, I may stick with Ings for one more week and just move Bowen to Greenwood and just get on with my life. You know, I don't want to have this annoying problem anymore of having a Jared Bowen in my team. It's just like, I want to, it's kind of like you with Saka. It's like, I just want to get past my mistake. But if you burn four, what would you do?
Yeah, well, now that I'm thinking about it, and both of us have talked about the idea of Willian being compelling coverage for Arsenal attack, I think if I could hang on for one more game week till we come to the Arsenal-Liverpool matchup, where I'd be more comfortable moving Aubameyang on and just kind of seeing what happens with Willian, that would just give me so much more money to do something much more interesting with Saka and Saint-Maximin. So
you love to bank a transfer, Brandon.
But I'm not going to bank a transfer. If I don't burn four, I'm definitely bringing in Martial. Definitely. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, cause you could go Mitro to Bamford, I guess, or somebody like that. Callum Robinson, and then
if Fulham are going to take any points this season, it's going to be against a team that they actually have recently played against. I mean, not recently beat, not that they beat Leeds in the championship, but that's just not a priority for me. I mean, Mitro is not, you don't feel good about Mitro. I wouldn't suggest that you should feel good about Mitro. You should feel concerned about it. However, I don't think it's a priority at the moment.
No, it's just when I look at my team, I'm concerned about Mitro. I'm concerned about Saint-Maximin, to be quite honest. I not enough to probably do anything about it right now. I'm concerned about Bowen. A little concerned about Davis, to be honest. And I'm not as concerned about Ings, you know, like that's the, I'm planning the same move as you, as you and I often end up moving. Yeah. You know, we sort of are, it's hard to do a podcast with somebody and not end up kind of sympathetic on a lot of ideas, but, you know, I think that is a move that I would do, but I don't feel like Ings at home to Spurs is some terrible fixture. Like it'd be okay to me if I had Ings for game week two. And so maybe I just solve one of these things that I don't feel good about first, you know, like one of the like kind of bedrock ideas of fantasy is fix your weakest link. Yeah. And if I look at my team right now, it's that I've got 6.5 tied up in Jared Bowen, who doesn't even look in shape. I don't know if that's just like how his body looks, but he, didn't look like he was ready to play at all. I was like, how did I ever get this guy into my team? I don't mean to go on him so much. I know he's scored some goals in the championship or whatever, but like, it was just kind of like, I was not feeling that move at all. All right. So just one last question here. FPL Mikey said, you know, what do you think about the Everton defense? Because that's another thing I could do is I could go Davis to Dean. Is Dean worth the price at 6 million?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, he showed against Spurs that, 6 million is a 100% fair price tag. Any fullback that's on set pieces like that, you know, the from Doherty to Trent, these fullbacks can absolutely earn that price tag. So we've got one sample, and it's against a fairly stout team in Spurs, and Dean did a job. So, I think that's a good place to look. My hesitation with Dean is not the player, not the team, and not really the price tag, because I think it's a fair price. It's more how is that just going to ripple through the rest of my FPL squad? Because basically, the first the first 60 minutes of this podcast have been like, my God, we need to scrounge every penny for our midfielders.
Yeah.
So, well, but yeah, I do have a Virgil van Dijk at 6.5, which is not looking like the best of picks coming out of game week one. So, you know, that's move him to Dean and you're getting a great fullback and you're saving money. So I like that move.
You know, one move I haven't thought about that this isn't actually related to the Everton defense, which I thought looked fine, but if I've got a million in the bank and I'm a little worried about Mitro, Dominic Calvert-Lewin is probably a pretty interesting option here. And I probably someone that we again, this is a little bit like the Man City thing where it's very easy to fall into the trap in preseason of really focusing on game week one. And I mean, suddenly you look ahead and you're like, wait a minute. Everton play West Brom, Crystal Palace, and Brighton in their next three. With two of those three at home, and they look incredibly dangerous, and nobody on their team is expensive. Like, what? Like, maybe we should have thrown him in game week one and not you know, sweated us out too much.
It actually went according to plan perfectly, Josh, because what we would say about Everton in the preseason is this all looks promising. But judging by their form after the restart, DCL didn't get any returns. We have to just see how they look. And what happened was they looked fantastic. It's not like DCL hauled, though. So we kind of got like the perfect litmus test. And now we know Everton is a safe space. So I feel great about everyone converging on Everton going into game week two, having seen what we saw in game week one. I feel like that's our logic sort of working as it should.
All right. Fair enough. All right, Brandon, that's game week two. Let's take one quick break and we'll get back and do our famous 30-second lightning round. Got some very good questions this week. Be right back.
Hey, gang. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30. The wait is finally over and football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going that extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use that promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, Brad, we're back. It's the lightning round. We've got 4 lightning round questions. Each question gets a 30-second response. So, Brandon, this whole section should take us 2 minutes to get through. First one comes from Benny Blanco. He says, when you are unsure what to do, is the best option to just do nothing?
This is the magic question, isn't it? I mean, we talked about this very earlier in our 10 Tips for Success podcast, where the hardest thing in fantasy is to know the difference between being patient and being passive. And being patient is generally good because you want to look at an FPL player, an FPL asset, and say, I brought you in for a reason. Maybe it didn't work out this week, but you know, on your current trajectory, we'll get points next week or the following week. But to be passive is to just look past the point that you have a bad asset and let it just sort of rot at the center of your team. So how do you know the difference? I think... I, How do you know the difference, Josh? What's the answer?
Well, I think that last year, I mean, honestly, and I'm sorry that you're the example I'm coming to here, Brandon, but I feel like last fall, this was a real issue for you, which is that you had a tricky team set up in a way where you had a lot of Man City players. And you didn't quite know what to do with them. And, you know, I mean, this is the thing is like you spent all this time putting together a Game Week One team. You, in theory, have a team full of players who you believe in, you know, at least a little bit. I mean, enough to have them for one game week, if not multiple game weeks. And so there is always a temptation to just stick. But I think that in general, the best option is to do something. It is not to do nothing. And I think that now, you know, let's say if Sadio Mane is an amazing player with a super long track record in the Premier League, used to be a little better at home on the road, but kind of reversed that last season. Or just sort of leveled things out a little bit. If I had Sadio Mane, I wouldn't do anything. I would just keep him, you know? But Jared Bowen, Mitro, these players, you know, move them. It's fine, you know? Just like don't. Like,
here's the tricky one.
Not, yeah, yeah.
The tricky one is Spurs, Josh. Okay, so there are a lot of people out there with Harry Kane and Son. And I would be quite unsure about that after the Everton match. Now, are you unsure because Spurs didn't look great? Or are you unsure because Everton looked that good? So if you're neither of us have Spurs assets right now, I feel like they are in the uncertainty camp where they should be moved to the Williams, Arsenal attackers, City Rashford. And United attackers. Exactly. Right. Yeah. I feel like that's great.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that if I had Son in my team and I had 0.5 million in the bank still, I would move Son to Rashford. Just like I would keep things very simple. Now, yeah, I mean, this is assuming you have no other issues in your team or whatever. I mean, I don't think that having Son away to Southampton is I mean, it's a bit like Mane, right? I mean, we know that Son is a player capable of some massive returns. And so if you keep him, that's not a huge problem, but again, it's not about who you're getting rid of. It's who you're bringing in. And that's what you have to focus on with this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and actually it's interesting because the next question sort of ties in with this. It's from Joaquim, who is the designer of the Always Treat Make Fantasy Fun Again t-shirt.
Chef's
available,
kiss.
Yeah, available to patrons of the top two tiers and available on our shop. He says, what do you think of, that's a free plug for our Patreon, Brandon. He says, when you think of transfers, do you prefer focus? When you think of transfers, do you prefer to focus on getting players who performed well last game week in or players who underperformed in your squad out? So again, just to simplify that question, do you focus on players who performed well last game week and bringing in good players?
Okay.
Or do you focus on taking out bad players? Where's your focus?
Oh, the focus should be bringing in good players because I feel like you get into trouble when you say, I'm angry at this player in my team. I'm getting him out. And you could be bringing another problem in if your focus is just on getting a player out. So just focusing on the positive, what do you hope to achieve by getting a player out? And what you would hope to achieve is actually bringing a good asset in. So start the conversation with what is it that you want your team to look like? Who is it that you want to be in your team? And then move on from there. Now, I think what you would say to that, Josh, is another best practice is to fix your weakest link. So, you know, you identify who you want to get out in your team. But it's kind of like it's not as complicated as I'm making it sound because you kind of know who needs to go out and don't focus too much on that. Just focus on who you're going to get in because you kind of already know who's going to go out anyway.
I think it's a really interesting question, though. It's something that I wonder if I think about enough, like, you know, as a sort of strategy. It's interesting. I mean, as we're sort of talking, I'm actually maybe talking myself into Calvert-Lewin for Mitro and sort of abandoning my earlier plan and keeping Ings for a game week. Because maybe I do just want to take the underperformer out. I don't know. It's tricky. They play away to Leeds, then they play home to Aston Villa. I mean, I don't want to get too into my own squad again here, but you know, I mean, you do have to think about, it's not in a vacuum. You know, you have to think about like long-term, like, is this player underperforming, but are their fixtures about to get a lot better? You know, is this player that I'm getting in or that I'm targeting, like if you focus on players get, you know, perform well, bringing them in. Like, is this player about to like jump like 0.2, 0.3 in price? If so, do I want to move just to get them early? I think the price changes have an effect on this as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And those are, I think tomorrow night, Monday night, maybe Tuesday night will be when we first see price changes really start to come along. If I'm looking at the site I like to use, we both like to use, is fplstatistics.co.uk. It's a good place to go for real-time projections on price rises and drops.
Yep.
I mean, Bamford for Leeds right now, Sunday night, is a 68% chance of rising. So if you add another couple days on that, maybe he's getting close to rising around Tuesday night. So it's just something that we're going to have to start really talking about in a couple days.
Yeah, I think that Willian will end up having a price rise this week as well. Annoyingly, it looks like De Bruyne may have a price rise too, which would really screw up some plans, Brandon. So
yeah, I'm shocked. I didn't think that was going to happen. I figured that most people who had De Bruyne would just have him coming in game week one, and you wouldn't see too much action with him until he actually took the pitch and did something to encourage more transfers. So, but here we are.
Yeah, and I, if I'm not mistaken, even if you players brought in on a wild card are not do not impact the price change delta. So
So yeah, if you've got a bunch of people out there who triggered their wild card and are now bringing in City and United players, by that logic, they shouldn't be impacting those.
I think we're getting close to 30 seconds in our response here to
Joaquin. Right.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's move to the next question. Joe Anderson says, how many game weeks should we actually wait to make opinions of players and teams? It's a very philosophical light around this time, Brandon. So how many game weeks should we wait to make opinions of players and teams? I'm still not sure we have much idea about the promoted sides after these games. Bamford transfers seem ridiculously premature. So, what do you think about this? How long do you wait to make an opinion of a player and a team?
Well, I do think that we didn't see many surprises. I mean, maybe Everton and Newcastle being as well prepared for the season as they were surprises. But that aside, looking at Fulham and Leeds, we expected Fulham to struggle. We expected Leeds to be an organized attacking outfit, and those have borne out to be true. So you know what the deal is with those. I don't feel like we need another one or two or three more game weeks to know where we stand with teams like that. So, Joe, I think we're good. I think you have what information you need to act on. I think obviously with the promoted teams, I feel like there's more likelihood that there will be two or three different players who kind of like come into the points week to week. So maybe it's going to take us three or four to really zero in on it. Is Jack Harrison the guy? Is Rodrigo the guy?
Totally. That's why I don't want to do a game week two wildcard, for example. I don't feel like I have enough information yet to have strong opinion. I mean, you know, of course we're always making opinions as we watch these matches, and I have, you know, I mean, you've got opinions on the hair of the Leeds players, but you can't help that. Okay. You're forming those opinions as you watch.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and again, it's like this Fulham thing. How could you watch that match and not have some opinions about how that club is going to do this season? And so these are just natural things. But yeah, I think to start acting on them too early does seem a little premature. I say all that having talked all pod about how I might drop Mitro. So, you know, maybe I'm just being a hypocrite here, but I do think that you should give it at least 3 or 4 weeks, especially with the promoted sides. Migs, final question. With so many mid-price bargains in the game, do you think you could have a top 10K season without any Man City players so as to avoid the inevitable? Brandon, I can't even say the words.
Pep roulette.
You do it. I plugged my ears when you said it. Yep. So what do you think? Is this something that you could pull off? Could you pull off a top 10K season without a Man City player?
No, you can't do it because they will score a lot of points. I tried to do this. You mentioned this. Last fall, I tried to go without Liverpool assets, and I went all in on Manchester City, and that blew up in my face. It would have blown up in my face if I didn't have Kevin De Bruyne at all. It's not like you could have covered Kevin De Bruyne's points with all of Liverpool. The key to success, the key to a top 10K finish, is striking that right balance. And maybe you can, I think you could still achieve a top 10K finish going without city assets for a month stretch at the right point in the season when the fixtures really line up for other top four teams or really punishing attacking FPL outfits. But I think that's just not the right strategy.
No, I don't think it is either. I mean, the problem is you can go out without those players, but you know, everybody else will have those players in their team. And all it will take will be a couple of, which happens like every third game week, one of Sterling or Kevin De Bruyne are going for like, you know, 22 points and being captained by whatever, you know, having an effective ownership of 135% in the top 10K. And there goes your chance, you know, I mean, not completely, but just like it's going to put you in a massive hole sort of every time that happens. And so
that's it. I think that's a good way of putting it, is the problem with going without city assets or Liverpool is their captain's players. You can go without Danny Ings. You can go without, maybe you can go without some of these Chelsea guys because they wouldn't be captained and it's easier to skirt around them.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what it is. I mean, this is why, like, the Everton thing, it's like, it's tempting to do it, but it's not going to hurt me if I don't bring in Everton players. You know, it's like their ownership is not going to be overwhelming for any one player for a while, at least. If Dominic Calvert-Lewin keeps performing really well, then sure, then maybe you're in a tricky spot. But, you know, I mean, his ownership, Richarlison's at 10, he's at 7. But, you know, if Kevin De Bruyne is already set for a price rise, he already came into the season with, what was it, like probably at least 20-something% ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So if that keeps rising, he's at 27.2% already. He's so good. I mean, it's not like you're and also, I actually don't think that the roulette hits the top players as much as people think. I mean, Riyad Mahrez is a player who is always a little bit at risk. But I think with De Bruyne and Sterling and honestly, even Aguero when he's healthy, I think those three players in the attack are pretty locked in. Yes, Aguero is going to miss one start out of five, but typically that's fine because you're going to get so many such massive returns from the other four matches that it justifies the one game week when he gets benched or comes off the bench.
Dominic Calvert-Lewin is unbeatable in the air. Like that's a stat that he is insane at. Like his aerial duels won is, I feel like he led the season two seasons ago in aerial duels won, and he saw it against Spurs, just like crushing that header into the goal. Like,
beautiful ball from Dean too.
Yeah, in the air, this guy is unbeatable. And James Rodriguez, like his crosses were delicious. If he's feeding off of all of the, if DCL's feeding off of all those balls, I think like there would be a ton of headed goals by DCL this season.
Yeah, I would say that Richarlison arguably better. His finishing was insane. Insanely poor, but he looked like, man, he was up for it. He looked really good. I'm going to bring him my team for 8 million good, but he looked really dangerous. I thought, it's just interesting. The one thing that was fun about that Spurs match was you knew that was going to be a goal because the announcers were celebrating the cross as it was sailing in. Like no one had even touched it yet. And they were already congratulating. Like they knew because a ball that good, somebody is going to score on it. It was impossible not to. And it was a really beautiful, I actually thought the game wasn't so bad. People came in negative on Spurs, but I thought the first half was pretty back and forth. There were some interesting moments and Son looked okay. Kane did not look very good. But I thought that was like one moment of like all you want in a match is like one glorious moment, you know? And it's kind of like the end of that Southampton game. You and I were trying to pump ourselves up and not get too negative. We're like, let's just have one fun moment here. And right at the end, it was Kyle Walker-Peters feeding Ings in, and you were like, oh, he didn't score, but it was a beautiful moment. You know,
it was exciting.
Yeah, it was exciting. And on that upbeat note, Brandon, that's your podcast for game week, for the end of game week one, the start of game week two. Thank you to everyone who listened to this week's podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast on Patreon, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. We would really sincerely appreciate it. And you get a lot of free stuff as well. Well, I guess you're a patron, so it's part of the package. It's not exactly free.
It's all good stuff, though.
You get lots of good stuff. I want to quickly thank our producers as well. Thank you to Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian Tita, Big Gaffer, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Benning, Dave Agnolodal, Nick Kreit, Jim Payne, Blair, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forberg, Skogang, Paul Hertzig, Kaya, Christine Lalang. Congrats on all the playmaker stuff this week, Kaya. They did a very cool rundown, like a fantasy football guide to beginners. I don't know if you saw that, Brent. It was very, really cool page they put together. Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markoff, FPL Merch, Kerry Swanson, Brandon B., Paul Scanlon, Kieran Screeton, James Hurd, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Producer Matt, Michael Yuang, Bruce Kerr, Alper Paxoy, Nicholas Vernadakis, Sam Schauer, Henry Baker, and Will Husby. Got two Husbys now, Brandon, in the producer tier. It's very cool.
I feel like they should start a law firm, Husby and Husby.
They really should. They really should. Maybe they've already done that. You know, we'll find out more. We'll do some sleuthing.
Uh-huh. All right. Yeah. Another way to support the pod is that is free to you is just to leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or subscribe to the podcast wherever it is that you get your podcast, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, and the like. Follow us wherever you get social media, at Hail Cheaters on Twitter, at Hail Cheaters, Instagram, Facebook.com/alwayscheating. Or send us an email, hailcheaters@gmail.com. All this information and more is available to you at our website, alwayscheating.com.
Brandon, Lord Soloth may be back, maybe coming to Spurs. I can't think of any better way to make fantasy fun again. We'll see you next week.